Hello, it's Monday, September 21st, and this is going to be our discussion of topics for Math 310. Here's a nice picture of me for you to enjoy on screen 2. And now we're going to make some summatory remarks about the chapter that we've been covering. Some of this is a little technical, but there's some good ideas here too. So an elementary statement such as A equals George is tall has a truth value assigned to it. It is either true or false. From the point of view of mathematics, there is nothing to prove or study about this statement. Likewise for the statement Barbara is wise. It's either true or false, which one can simply observe, and that's all there is to say about it. On the other hand, a statement like A or B is subject to mathematical analysis. Namely, it is true if at least one of A or B is true, otherwise it is false. So one has to think a little bit to determine whether A or B is true. A statement that is true regardless of the truth values of its individual components is called a tautology. An example of a tautology is B implies A or not A. This statement is true all the time, regardless of the truth values of A and B. You could set up a truth table to satisfy yourself that this is the case, or else you could simply observe that the statement A or not A is always true. If A is false, then not A is true. If A is true, then not A is, then either way, A or not A is always true, and therefore the implication is always true. Another example of a tautology is A implies B if and only if not A or B. This is one we've discussed before, and we said that A implies B and not A or B are logically equivalent, which tells you that, of course, A implies B if and only if not A or B is true all the time. So this is a tautology. And I encourage you to set up a truth table to verify this for yourself. So we have two ways to think about whether a certain statement is valid all the time. One is to substitute in all possible truth values, and two is to prove the statement from elementary first principles. We have seen two examples of one. Now let's look at an example of two. In order to provide an example of a provable statement, we must isolate in advance what are the syllogisms that we assume in advance to be true and what rules of logic are allowed. In a formal treatment of logic, such as Suppe's or other standard references, we would begin on page 1 of the book with the syllogism and rules of logic and then proceed rigidly step by step. At each stage, we would have to check which rule or syllogism is being applied. The present book is not a formal treatment of logic. It is, in fact, a more intuitive approach. For the remainder of this section, however, we lapse into the formal mode so that we may learn more carefully to distinguish truth from provability. First, which rules of logic do we allow? There was only one. Modus ponendo ponens is the only rule of logic. This is the rule that A implies B together with A entails B. Now, the other assumptions are these. For the present discussion, we take not and or as our only primitive connections. And we know from our earlier work that all connectives can be generated by not and or. Then we have these axioms, or these statements. A implies B is an abbreviation for not A or B. A and B is an abbreviation for not, parenthesis, not A or not B. C or C implies C. C implies C or B. C or B implies B or C. B implies A implies, parenthesis, C or B implies C or A. Axioms 1 through 4 are all intuitively obvious. We've discussed them before. Any good axiom should have this feature because we do not verify or prove axioms, so axioms should be intuitively appealing. The axioms are our starting place. Nothing comes before the axioms. We just accept them. For example, let us think about axiom 2. If we assume that C is true, then it is certainly the case that C or B is true. In this way, we satisfy our intuition that axiom 2 is a reasonable axiom. You may check the other axioms for yourself using similar intuitive reasoning. In some more formal treatments, additional rules of logic are enunciated. The axiom of substitution, otherwise known as the axiom schema of replacement, is also an important rule of logical reasoning. We shall say more about it later on in Chapter 5. In a formal treatment of proof theory, we sometimes specify, in addition to modus ponens, a system of logical axioms that allow the inference of self-evident tautologies from no hypotheses. One such system is this. And I list here 10 axioms, which I won't bother to read to you. You can read them for yourself. And they all make pretty good intuitive sense if you just stop and think about them for a few moments. And you can also use a truth table to verify any one of them. And also two axiom schemes for the quantifiers. A of t implies there exists x, a of x, and for all x, ax implies a of t. And two additional quantifier rules of inference. C implies a of x entails c implies for all x, a of x, and ax implies c implies there exists x, so that ax implies c. We refer to axioms 1 through 10 as F in honor of Gottlob Frege, who's one of the greatest logicians who ever lived. It is a remarkable fact that F is complete in the sense that any tautological statement of the propositional calculus can be proved using F. For the purposes of the present book, modus ponendo ponens will be the primary rule of reasoning. The reader can safely worry about no others. Any assertion that we assert to be provable must be derivable using the logical rule modus ponendo ponens from our notational conventions in these axioms. As an illustration, let us prove the statement, it's not true that B and not B. You can easily check this with a truth table, so it is a tautology, but now we want to prove it from one, our definitions, two, our axioms, and three, our rules of logic. And you can see intuitively that the statement is true all the time, because If B is true, then not B is false. So B and not B is false. So not B and not B is true. Right? And so, I mean, so if B is true, that's how it plays out. And if B is not true, that's how it plays out. So it's clearly true all the time. But let's derive it from our definitions, our axioms, and our rules of logic. Now, N2 above shows that the statement that we wish to prove is just the same as not B or B. We've used here the logical equivalents of not B and B. It is more natural to prove this statement since our axioms are formulated in terms of the connective or and not. Here's the proof. By axiom 1, B or B implies B. By axiom 4, B or B implies B implies not B or B or B implies not B or B. By modus ponendo ponens, not B or B or B implies not B or B. Applying axiom N1 to this last step, we get B implies B or B implies B implies B. By axiom 2, we get B implies B or B. By modus ponendo ponens, we get B implies B. And applying N1 to the last step, we get not B or B, and that completes the proof. Implicit in this discussion we just had of why we can restrict the tangent to just the connectives, not an or. In fact, all other connectives can be expressed in terms of just these two. As an instance, A and B is logically equivalent to not A or not B. Likewise, A implies B is logically equivalent with not A or B. These statements can be checked with truth tables. It can be shown that not and can be used to generate all other connectives. Some combinations are not possible. Or and cannot be used to form a statement that is equivalent to not. Again, you can use truth tables to confirm this assertion. There's actually a single connective that can be used to generate all the other connectives, and you can look it up on the internet if you're interested. It's natural to ask, and we raised this question implicitly in an earlier lecture, whether every tautology is provable. That every provable statement is a tautology is an elementary corollary of our logical structure. That this is so is Frege's theorem. This statement is summarized by saying that elementary sentential logic is complete. In fact, Kurt Gödel proved in 1930 that the so-called first-order predicate calculus is complete. The first-order predicate calculus is essentially the logic that we have described in the present chapter. It includes elementary connectives, quantifiers, statements with one or more, variables, and so on. Thus, according to Gödel, any provable statement in this logic is true, and more profoundly, any true statement is provable. Gödel went on to construct a model for any consistent system of axioms. Interestingly, his proof requires the axiom of choice, which is a very subtle idea that we'll learn about later. Gödel's more spectacular contribution to modern thought is that in any logic that is complex enough to contain arithmetic, there are sensible statements that cannot be proved either true or false. More precisely, there are true statements that cannot be proved, and there are false statements that cannot be disproved. For example, piano's arithmetic contains statements that cannot be proved either true or false. A rigorous discussion of this celebrated incompleteness theorem is beyond the scope of the present book. Suffice it to say that Gödel's proof consists of making an infinite list of all provable statements, enumerating with a system of Gödel numbers, and then constructing a new statement that differs from each of these. Since the constructed statement cannot be on the list, it also cannot be provable. And I give you some references here in case you want to read more about Gödel's theorem. This is one of the big ideas of 20th century mathematics. Theoretical computer scientists have shown considerable interest in Gödel's incompleteness theorem. For a computer language, even an expert system can be thought of as a logical theory. Gödel's theorem says, in effect, that there will be statements formulable in any sufficiently complex language that cannot be established through a sequence of logical steps from first principles. So that tells the computer scientists that in any programming language, there are going to be certain results that you cannot derive. And I include here at the end of this discussion some talk about Gödel's life. He had a happy childhood, but as an adult, he suffered from mental illness. He had many, many phobias. And in fact, near the end of his life, his wife had to go into the hospital for a few weeks, and Gödel would only eat food that his wife would prepare for him, so he starved himself to death. Really very sad. And that's the end of today's discussion. I'll see you on Wednesday.